Good evening, everybody. 7 o'clock straight up. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phone. Please. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble states, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are talking about step 9, part 2. And I'd like you to help us welcome our panel this evening. We have Kay and Steve.
Hi.
I'm going to read the first paragraph of the reading tonight, and then the panel will share on each one.
You got the big print.
This is exciting for me.
You should start right here.
Kay was here when I got here, and when I got here again, and when I got here again. We're going to start tonight on page 80. This always is baffling to me. The chances are we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if in this respect alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations at home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Ladies' choice, do you want to go first or do you want to make Steve go first?
I'm going to make Steve go first. I like doing that.
Yeah, how'd it go?
Good evening. My name is Steve Rocha, and I'm an alcoholic. So the chances were very good early on that I was mixed up and had some domestic troubles. I'd like to say, first of all, that I agree with what we say in AA, that no step is more important than the next. But however, everything that I do is built on the fourth step. After we get past one steps 1, 2, and 3, step four is kind of where the rubber meets the road. If I'm really going to do this deal, then this is where it really starts, because I can stay sober doing the AA two-step shuffle. For those of you that are newer, don't know what the two-step shuffle is, the AA two-step shuffle is the first part of step one and the second part of step 12. And I know guys and gals that stay for years doing the two-step shuffle. I did it for a little while and just couldn't keep it up. I always ended up drinking again. So I don't have to take the steps, but if I'm going to be, if I want the results that are described in this book, I got to follow the directions that are laid out in the book. And so once we get to the inventory part, and hopefully by then my sponsor's guided me to this, when we get in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, when we get to step 6, 7, 8, and 9, step 6 and 7 are one paragraph each, and steps 8 and 9 are kind of melded together into this chapter here. And so I have found by working with the sponsor that took me through the steps, that when we got to step 6, we opened up the 12 and 12 and went into the steps from step 6 on there, through there. Because it's critical for me to understand, so in step 6, we're asking God to remove our defects of character. Well, I need to learn what they are. I need to identify. The book says I have to identify them and claim them as my own. And so if my sponsor doesn't teach me how to do that, I'm never going to know how to do that. So, and then in step 7, we talked about removing my shortcomings. I didn't know what my shortcomings are. And I know it's a lot, but this is all, it's all built one on the other. And so when I got to step 8, I have to make a list, and my sponsor told me I break it down into 4 categories. The amends that I can make now, the amends that have to wait, the amends that I can't make, and the amends that I won't make. So when I got to step 9, we did the amends that I can make right away. Typically, for most of it, it's our immediate family, because they want what's best for us. They wish us well, they want us to do well, and so on, and they don't have to worry about us anymore. Or in my case, bail me out of jail anymore. And so, When I got to this part and I was able to make amends, for example, to my wife, in all that what we just read about the wife, that's what happened to me. Because when it comes to drinking, and I do a lot of other things when I'm drinking, I don't do them when I'm not drinking, but when I'm drinking, man, all bets are off. And so our relationship was rocky at best. And we used the phrase, my wife and I, when we talk about my past, we use the phrase that I was wild. She's never asked me how many women there were, who they were, when they were, anything. We just acknowledged that I was wild and I don't live like that anymore. And I'm grateful that my wife is able to, has enough spiritual strength in her life that she can do that. Because I know a lot of wives that can't do that. Not my wives, but other guys that I know, their wives, they get hung up on that kind of stuff. And so I'm grateful my wife didn't, and we're able to grow from that. Somewhere in this book or 12, it talks about how our wives become neurotic because we made them that way, with all the uncertainty and all the fear that builds up in our lives because of my drinking and my behavior. So it's not surprising that our marriage turned out, a relationship in the beginning, the way it was. We didn't get married until after I was about 10 months sober. So you know what we hear our sponsors say, no major decisions for a year. I got married, I quit my job, and I moved to Virginia at 10 months. You know, so I don't know if that really works in us moving here. Jake and I were talking about, you know, how we make decisions that seem like the right thing to do at the time. When I moved to Virginia some 25 years ago, it was the worst decision we ever made. But because I stayed in AA and I got plugged in and I followed through with the process, it's turned out to be the best thing we've ever done. But I can't always see the forest through the trees, you know? So, and it's because I got a sponsor and he guided me through the steps, and this is what we do. And so when we get to the amends process, and we're gonna read about this hopefully, about the spiel that we give, or that I give when I go to make an amends. There's a little spiel that I give that my sponsor told me how to do, and I do it every time I go to make an amends. And it seems to work. I've never been thrown out of anybody's office. I had some people that did refuse to see me. They still wanted the money, they just didn't want to see me. And so I just gave them the money. I left the money with the secretaries. So that's all. Thank you.
Thanks Steve. Hi, everybody. My name's Kay. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kay.
And as usual, God prepared me good for today. I had to make an amends to a good friend of mine, and so it put me in the right place, which is always good for me. I agree with what Steve said about the fourth step. The fourth step is what builds for all of these things here. And in the fourth step, there's something called the conduct inventory. And the conduct inventory, or the sex inventory is the sexier name, really gets me into what this chapter is talking about. And it's domestic relationships. Marriage was on my fourth step as an institution that I had a resentment against. I've never been married. I tried to get married a couple of times to get out of the house, but I was thwarted. The first time I was 17 and I met a sterling young sailor. I met so many sterling young sailors. But this guy was great. He was AWOL. He smoked dope. He got me liquor. He was cute. He was wonderful. He was my man. And so we decided to get married after a relatively short period of time, a week or so, I think. And at that time, you had to be 18. Maybe you still do. I don't know. I quit being interested in that. But I knew my mother wouldn't sign for me, so I went down to Knott's Island, North Carolina, where my father was, with his second family. And I said, well, he doesn't care, because that's what I thought about that. And he'll sign, and I'll get married and get out of the house, and everything will be great. I didn't really care about this guy. I won't say that. I cared in the way I could care. But as is my pattern, it was really how I could use him and how he could get me what I wanted and needed. And so we go down to Knott's Island, North Carolina, and my father, who's a really kind of quiet guy, he doesn't say much. I pop up at his doorstep and say, you know, I need you to sign some papers so I can get married. And he says, well, let's sleep on it. And I had my guy with me, you know, my sterling sailor. And we talked to my father about stuff, and during the course of the conversation, he learned he was AWOL. And about midnight, the shore patrol came and took him away in chains. And of course, I was horrified that my chance to escape had been put in jail. but that started me on the path of, well, I'm mad at people controlling me, men especially, my father, later on other people. And so I just started using people more and more. And so my domestic situations over the years were terrible. It was always what I could get out of somebody. And although I think there was real emotion and feeling there, alcohol and my nature kept me from really being able to be any kind of a decent partner for anyone. Today I have domestic situations. I'm still anti-marriage, but I've had relationships, and one pretty interesting one in sobriety that I'm in right now, and I have amends to make as a result of that in our domestic relationship. And thanks to the steps, I've been given a method to do that, and I'm not the user I used to be, thanks to the steps. And thanks to the amends process, my sponsor told me, Steve was talking about no relationship in the first year. And a sponsee came to me with that problem, and I went to my sponsor and I said, well, what am I supposed to say? I had a relationship. Everybody I know had a relationship. You know, it's not in the big book that you can't have. It doesn't say anywhere in there you can't have a relationship in the first year. And we were in the middle of doing the steps out of the big book, so I asked her, I said, what am I supposed to say? I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to tell her what to do. And she had some really interesting experience with that, in that we don't get to decide what we do in the first year. And really, in all the years after I start getting sober, I don't get to make decisions like that. I don't know that maybe a relationship would be the exact thing we need. Or maybe we'll get drunk and maybe we need that. So that was really helpful to me, because I didn't like the whole idea of telling somebody what they could do. God tells me what to do today, and it works out a lot better for that. And I think that's all I got on that.
Thank you. Anybody in the room willfully follow that, no relationships in the first? I'm waiting to meet that person. Page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear the alcoholic say the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Steve?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a quick story about why it's been so beneficial for me to take an inventory and work the steps out of the book. Because I recently went through a bout of that fear of financial insecurity crept back into my life. And for me, when that fear hits me, man, it's freaking paralyzing. And I'll stay in bed for 2 or 3 days, you know, and just that dark veil of depression sets in on my life again. And this time it didn't. And when I started to snap out of it Monday morning, I called, I think, 5 alcoholics before 8 a.m. I told them all what was going on in my life. Because when I'm open about what's happening in my life, it's a little easier for me. And you know, the guys are sending me text messages and image pictures of readings and other books that we use and so on and so forth. And in talking to my sponsor, so the benefit to all of this is because I learned how to identify these things in my life by taking an inventory, like it says in the book. Because when we get to the part where it talks about our fears, that I have to list them. And I know fear of financial security is huge in my life. It's big for me. It's not always present, but sometimes when it hits me, man, it hits me. And so I was able to identify what was going on in my life. And that's the benefit of taking the steps out of the book with a sponsor that can describe to me, this is what's going on. So anyways, having with the parents and the family. And I too fell into the trap thinking that, well, I quit drinking, isn't that enough? And it's not. Our literature talks about that the family will come around because my wife is a good church-going gal when I met her, still is, and she didn't want my brand of spirituality. She didn't, you know, because right away I got something better than that stuff you learn in a church. Come on, come with me. And she's like, I've been doing this a lot longer than you have. Just keep doing what you're doing. And so my brand of spirituality didn't work for her. However, I understand today that the relationship that we have is all due to what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. The relationship with the God of my understanding, I found through taking steps in AA. And we're not on the same path, but we're going in the same direction, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Typically, when we see spouses come in, or one or the other, typically, especially if they're drinking buddies, my wife and I, we weren't, but if one of them comes in and finds a spiritual path and the other one doesn't, we actually end up growing apart. And I'm very fortunate that in my case, we're growing along the same lines, just not on the same path. She gets what she's looking for in church, and I get what I'm looking for in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so by coming here, I get to meet other guys and gals that are dying from untreated alcoholism. And we have a solution here, and we try to present the solution in as best a way as we possibly can. I'm not by no means saying that I got the only way to do this, follow me, I'll show you the light. I don't think there's a wrong way to work the steps. I used to, but I don't think that anymore. My mind has been changed. However, I do think that if I want my cake to look like the cake that's described in the book, I got to follow the recipe. So when it says use 1 cup of sugar and 2 teaspoons of salt, that's kind of the deal. But because I'm a smart guy, I want to change it. Because I like my cake a little sweeter than everybody else. So I want to do my little twist on it. And I have found my experience over the years is that doesn't work. And so when I get to the park, so my sponsor and I, we sat down and most of the names that were on my 4-step ended up on my 8-step list. And once we categorized them and decided, all right, I want you to go talk to this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, and this is what you're going to do. Because I don't know what to make it. I don't know how to make amends. I've been saying I'm sorry my whole freaking life. And you know, it's kind of like the last time I told my wife, I promise I'm going to quit drinking. Yeah, you said that last time. No, but this time I really mean it. Yeah, you said that last time too. And so everybody's heard my sorries, and I'm sorry. That's all I know how to say is I'm sorry, because I just don't know what else to do. And so my sponsor told me, this is what you're going to do, and this is what you're going to say. And one of the examples that I like to use, because I don't like to talk about my immense the personal stuff here, I do with the guys that I sponsor and my sponsor, but typically not from the podium or anything like that, is that if I owe you an amends, and I know what it is, and I go to see you, and I said, I'm here to make amends for what I'm, because I took this or did that, whatever the case may be. And so if the guy doesn't want the money, and part of the spiel, at the end of the spiel, is there anything I can do to make this right? And if he says, yeah, I want you to come wash my truck every Sunday for a month, then I get to go wash the guy's truck for every Sunday for a month. So at the most, it's going to be 5 times. And then I get to take him off the list. And so the literature talks about, I have to be spiritually fit to do these things. Good prudent. I have to be prudent and use good judgment. And that's why I have to talk to my sponsor. I'll wait till the next time. I got another story to tell you about not talking to a sponsor before making an amends. I'm sorry.
My experience with this paragraph is immense. There's a reason I wanted Steve to talk first. He said a lot of things that strike the things that I guess God wants me to talk about. Because when in the beginning he talked about two-stepping. And some of us do that for a long time. And I did that for 17 years. I didn't drink, and I did service work. And the rest in between stuff was, I was pretty much just like I was when I was drinking without alcohol. And during that period of time, towards the end of that period of time, my mother, who took care of me so well when I was drinking, she let me in when I was loud and obnoxious and rude and disgusting. She never turned me away. She took care of my daughter when I was unable to. She loved me when I was very, very unlovable. That's what she did for me. She worked 2 jobs to give me everything I needed and most of what I wanted. And that was the kind of mother she was. And when I first got in the program, I tried to make amends to her. And I remember yelling at her during the process because she wouldn't accept them the way I wanted her to, the way I needed her to. I was maybe 2 years sober. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, really. And that's fine. A lot of us don't. But I was trying to make her accept this amends for what a horrible person I was so that I would feel better. And that was really why I was doing it. And she wasn't responding the way I needed her to. So I'm yelling at her. I did do that to you. I was that way, because she was saying it wasn't that bad. You're my daughter. I love you. No, I was horrible. It was a lovely thing, very spiritual. But that's the kind of amends I made to her in the beginning. Fast forward several years, I've been in the program and sober. Well, I've been in the program and not drinking, mostly sober. For 17 years, and we end up living together. And she was 88 at the time, and I was having an experience with the Big Book. I had met my present sponsor. We were going through the steps for the first time for me, out of the Big Book. Things were happening in my sober life that were different. I was changing. I was waking up. I thought I was hot stuff. I gotta be honest. I thought I was hot stuff. I'm having this magnificent spiritual experience. I'm going to 1 million meetings. I'm sponsoring a lot of people. That's the way it was. But at home with my mom, I was impatient. I was angry. I never thought, when I'm running around to AA meetings every night and doing all the fellowship stuff that's so much fun, going out to dinner afterwards, meeting my girlfriends for movies on the weekends, just having a wonderful life that God gave me. I never thought that she's sitting home alone. She's sitting home by herself while I'm out being so sober. It didn't occur to me that that was not a good thing that I was doing. I knew I was really impatient with her, and I knew something was wrong. I was waking up enough to realize that this isn't, something ain't right here. And I began writing inventory on my mom because I was so impatient. I began asking God to make me more patient, you know, to help me be a better daughter. But I wasn't changing my actions very much. You know, I was using the steps, but I wasn't really practicing the steps, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of this program is that I went around for years, at least 5 years, speaking at meetings, doing this, talking about my mom and what a horrible daughter I was. And I have a good friend. She used to be a member of this group. And I spoke one night. And after I spoke, I asked God for a new experience. I had been doing some work. I'd been being better with my mom. I had stopped leaving her alone all the time. I had started touching her and loving her and hugging her, telling her how much I loved her and how important she was. I was changing with her. And I got up and I spoke that night. And after I spoke, this friend came up to me and she said, "I was wondering how long it was going to take you." And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "You finally stopped talking about what a horrible daughter you are, and you finally started being the daughter you are." And I thought, you know, and that took a long time. For a long time, I was, "Ain't it grand I'm sober? Isn't it just wonderful?" And it's not. It wasn't that wonderful for people around me. And sometimes today, it's not that wonderful. The amends I had to make today, I was impatient to a good friend who was asking me for help, and I was willing to help her, but I got a little impatient. I rolled my eyes because I had to go back and do something again. And she has helped me so much, and never has she rolled her eyes at me. And she told me, she said, "Are you angry at me? I didn't mean to make you angry." And that, you know, that kind of pissed me off too. And then I got to thinking about it, because that's how I am. Damn it, I'm doing something for you. Don't be, you know, questioning me. I'm probably talking too much about this, but something else just occurred to me. My first sponsor got sick. She'd been my sponsor for 20 years. She helped me so much. She was wonderful. She put up with me she was wonderful. But she got sick towards the end of her life. And I would call her up with a problem or to ask her something, and she'd tell me about how bad she felt. And I was resentful at her because she wasn't listening to me. What about me? What about me? I was going over to her house. I was getting her groceries for her. I was trying to be helpful. I do try to be helpful. And then I would go over to my friend's house and bitch about her. I went to the grocery store, and I didn't get the right pancakes, and she would take them back. I don't like that kind. And he said, "What is wrong with you?" I said, "Well, you'd think she'd have a little gratitude." And he said, "What are you doing this for? For gratitude?" And I said, "I don't want to hear that stuff. I'm doing it, you know, that's the important thing." But it made me think, and that's the beauty of this program. When I start waking up, I can still do the same horrible things, but I start hearing myself, and people start saying things, and I hear what they're saying. And I know what they're meaning. And it ain't enough, excuse my English, it ain't enough to just stop drinking, not for this alcoholic. There's a whole lot more between not drinking and being the person I want to be. And it's a constant job. I mean, it's a daily thing. Thanks.
Thank you, Kit. All right, excuse me. We're going to continue on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. Steve?
Okay, so when we get the my nine-step list, or my eight-step list, is broken down into four categories. And when it came to the financial amends, one of my character defects is I like shiny objects. I like shiny stuff. And if it's your stuff, I don't care. I still like it. And so I was a thief. I wasn't a burglar, but I was a thief. I stole a lot of stuff. And I did a lot of strong arm robberies and that kind of stuff when I was a young man under the influence. I lived a criminal way of life for a long time, and I don't anymore, and I owe it all to Alcoholics Anonymous. However, so there's a lot of financial amends that I have to make. They're not all done yet. And one of the things my sponsor was adamant about when it came time to do this is that when it comes to financial amends, I have to show up with money in hand. I don't get to show up and say, oh, I'm here to make amends for what I did. I stole this or I took that or whatever. When I show up to make a financial amend, I need to show up with money in hand. It doesn't necessarily have to be all the money, but I have to show up with some money. And if I'm going to set up a payment plan, then I need to set up a payment plan. But I can't just show up and again say, I'm sorry, or blah, blah, blah. I have to show up with money in hand. And when it comes to the living amends, with most of my family, it was the living amend. Whereas with my children specifically. Now, I quit drinking when my daughter was 2 years old, and my son has never seen me drinking, and obviously my daughter doesn't remember. But, you know, I didn't get good overnight. I didn't turn into, you know, father of the year the next year. I was still off the rails in many ways with my anger and you know, my explosive temper and all that stuff. That didn't go away right away. That took there was a lot of work involved. A lot of amends, a lot of praying, a lot of inventory. All that stuff took a long, long time in my life. I know it's not like that way for you guys, but that's the way it was for me. It just took a long time. And so there's a lot of living amends that I had to make in sobriety to my family. And you know, part of that is just not repeating that behavior. You know, I've never been nominated for Father of the Year, and I probably never will be. However, I'm closer to the father that I've always wanted to be, thanks to what you guys have taught me, thanks to following, you know, what my sponsor said to do. And so one of the stories I wanted to tell you was about a guy, his name was Don. This happened about 20 years ago. He lived in Norfolk. We knew him from meetings over in Portsmouth. And he came to the meeting one night, and he was telling me and one of the other guys that he was going to go make some amends tonight to some guy. He slept with his wife, and he knows the guy was going to be at the bar, and he's going to go make amends to him. And I said, Don, have you talked to your sponsor? He said, yeah, he told me not to do it, but I got to do it. I don't think this is a good idea, Don. You might want to reconsider that. No, 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 I got to do it. So Don gallops off, goes to the bar. We heard the story a couple week or so later. Goes to the bar and gets his little ticket punched. I mean, he got beat up pretty good because the guy had been drinking, and you show up drinking, tell me you slept with my wife, what do you think is going to happen? And so he came back, and he got drunk after that. He got drunk after that, and he bounced in and out of AA for a short time, and we never saw him again. I don't know what happened. Nobody knows what happened to the guy. He just kind of vanished. And it's a good lesson. There's another lesson that I tell my guys about making amends that, and this is in the papers. This is a big deal. A guy that got sober, and when he was in college, he was in a fraternity, and they him and his buddies sexually abused this young lady. And he asked his sponsor if he can go make amends. His sponsor said no. He went and talked to somebody else. The guy said no. He went and talked to another guy. He says, yeah, that's probably a good idea. So the guy went and made amends to this lady. She was pregnant at the time. And what we don't realize is after we've come into their lives like the hurricane, the tornado ripping and roaring through their lives, after we leave, the wounds begin to heal slowly but surely. And when Steve shows up and says, hey, guess what? All I'm doing is ripping the scab back off. That's all I'm doing. So this guy creeps back into this lady's life. He finds her somehow. And she was pregnant at the time. And the trauma was so great that she had a miscarriage. I guess they drugged her. I don't know what the story was, the backstory and all that. But she knew something had happened, but she couldn't prove it. And when this guy confessed to her that he did that, she went to the police and had him arrested because there's no statute of limitation or something like that. And guess what? All of his buddies got arrested and they all went to prison. So how many lives, because they're all married and with careers and families now, how many lives were ruined because of me saying, not me, but this guy saying, I need to go make this amends to get this off my chest so I can feel better. The amends process is not designed to make me feel better. That's not what this is about. This is about clearing the slate, clearing up the wreckage of my past, sweeping off my side of the street, as we like to say in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what this is about. I get to feel better as a direct result if I'm connected. We're going to read a little further on about some of the things that I have to kind of have lined up in order for this to take place. Because if I'm not in a good spiritual place, I'm not going to be humble when I'm making this amend. Here's your goddamn money, you know, something like that. That's not an amend in my book. It's not the way my sponsor taught me. I have to be humble when I go to do these things. And for me, hard as this may be for you to believe, but humility doesn't come to me easily. And I struggle with it a lot. And so for me to get to that place, it takes a lot of prayer and inventory and talking with my sponsor. I've said this from the podium. It's the only time I say this from the podium, but usually. When I was drinking, I had an affair with my wife's cousin. And I got to know her in a biblical sense. And we were all at a party drunk, and he was passed out. And she says, help me take him home, get him in a car kind of thing. And one thing led to another. The next time we had relations, it wasn't so consensual. I had been drinking, but she hadn't. The third time we had relations, it wasn't consensual at all. She said no, and I forced myself upon her. I sexually abused my cousin's wife. And then I had to leave. This was down in Mexico, and I had to leave the country because I'd been arrested for attempted murder. And all this. My drinking just gets out of control. And so I didn't go back to see my family for a long, long time. And every time I would talk to my dad, and my family down in Mexico, they're very warm and kind and loving, unlike my family in Chicago, which is the complete opposite. And so my dad would always say, when are you going to come down, bring your kids? My kids never met my parents. They were like 10 years old, my dad, that is, in that side of the family, because of the shame and the guilt that I carried with me. And every time he asked me to come down, I'd make up some lame excuse about work or money or this and this. And he'd always say, don't worry about the money, I'll take care of it, blah, blah. But I just wouldn't go because the shame was too great. And so when I knew I finally had to do something about this, I sat with my sponsor, and we spent 6 months, I bet, working on this with the prayer and the inventory and getting ready to make amends. My family, my wife and children were going on vacation. I was going on a mission. I had a purpose for being there. And my purpose was to make this amends somehow because I knew I was going to see her. We're a very close-knit family. So we're having this family reunion, my wife and I were upstairs taking a nap, and I come downstairs and I heard her voice. And as I'm coming down the stairs, I just know what's going to happen. And man, she's going to smack. And everybody's there. The whole family's in the house. And she calls out my name. And I take a deep breath. I said, all right, here it goes. So I just kind of reached out my hand. I ducked my chin down, like, because I knew she was going to hit me. I ducked my chin down, and I reached my hand out. I said, how you doing? And she gave me a hug. She said, it's good to see you. I'm so glad you were able to bring your family down. And then we sat down for the family dinner, she sat with my wife and I and had dinner with us and was telling about her life, because my cousin died from untreated alcoholism. So she had to make her way through life with her kids. And it was just incredible. And not a word was mentioned about what had happened. But in her way, this was her way of allowing me to know that I'd been forgiven for what I'd done. And I owe that to Alcoholics Anonymous and the work that my sponsor guided me to do. Because if there had been no humility in my life, I'd have probably made a pass at her again. Just the kind of, that's the kind of guy I am. And so when it comes to stuff like this, this is why it's critical, man, that I have a sponsor that's already taken the steps, that's already had a spiritual awakening, and is grounded in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's too easy to get bad advice in AA, man, it really is. And some guys, sometimes they can kill us. Thank you.
The spiritual life is not a theory. I like theories. I would much rather keep everything on a theoretical level, because then you don't have to do anything. All you got to do, in my mind, is think about it. And I like thinking about stuff, not so much doing stuff. But there's no truer statement in the book that I know of. This is not a theory. I can't just think about being sober, think about practicing principles. I can't think about doing the steps. I have got to do something. And when you live in the world of the spirit, in reality and not in theory, I got to act different, and it's harder. It's harder than the life I led when I got to decide what I did and make decisions based on self and not worry about the consequences. I can't do that anymore. My daughter, I gave her away when she was 5 years old. I gave her to my sister for adoption. She always knew I was her mom, but we weren't in each other's lives because I was drunk. When I got into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the first things I wanted to do, like Steve's friend, without asking anybody, was go run and make amends to this 15-year-old girl, to this little girl who didn't understand anything about why her mother gave her away. She didn't know about alcoholism. She didn't know about any of that. I gave her away. That's what she knew. And I go running to her, and I'm begging her to forgive me, crying, very emotional, not thinking about how this is affecting her at all, just, oh, I'm so sorry, please forgive me, forgive me. And she didn't know what to do, but she said, okay, because she's a loving person. But she didn't know what to do with all that, and I was wrong to do that. But that's what happened. That's my experience. Years later, after I'd worked the steps, after I understood that this isn't a theory, and that making amends isn't about you forgiving me. It's about me righting a wrong that I've done, and for me to do something for you. Whatever that is, like Steve said, whatever they say, you gotta do it, man. And so I was able to go to her and sit down with her and explain the things I thought I had done and the regret I had in a general way. And we got to talk about that. And I got to ask her, tell me what you felt. Tell me how this affected you. Tell me what I did in your eyes. And she told me that. She told me. And we were able to talk about that. And she said, I always forgave you. But she needed to tell me what I had done to her. I know what I thought I had done. And that was a wonderful experience. And then last summer, I talk about this all the time. Y'all are going to get sick of it, but I'll be gone soon. So, but I went on this trip with her to Yellowstone, and we rented a vehicle and we took some camping equipment, and it was just the two of us driving all these thousands of miles in this beautiful spiritual place. It's just a different world out there. It was a beautiful trip. Every morning we would get up and I would ask her, do you want to hear the daily meditation that I was reading? And she would say yes. And I would read it, and we'd talk about it in the car. We'd talk about the meditation. We'd talk about God. We'd talk about how we feel about it. I talked to her, and it was wonderful. I can't describe the experience. This is what not being theoretical does. I get to have a real experience with people by listening and hearing what they have to say and sharing stuff that I never would have thought I would care about talking to anybody about. What do you think God is? How do you pray? You know, it's a wonderful thing. When you get out of the theory into the world of the Spirit, it is different and it is hard, but it is a wonderful place to be. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll continue on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble, without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Steve?
I just remembered as we were talking about another amend that I still haven't made. I actually completely forgot about it. When we were teenagers, a liquor store in our neighborhood burned down, and somebody was able to pry a sheet of plywood back, and one guy snuck in and was passing bottles. We robbed that store blind. All the labels were burned off, but we didn't care what it was. We drank it anyway. And I never made amends for that. I just realized that. So this is why we talk about these things. I remember I was sitting, we were sitting down having dinner after a Saturday night meeting one time. And I was talking about how when I worked at McDonald's as a kid, I used to steal from there, man. I stole cases of meat and orange juice and all kinds of stuff. And somebody said, yeah, but you've made amends for that already, haven't you? It's like, no, man, I completely forgot about that part. So that went on the list, and I actually had to, so that McDonald's wasn't there anymore, and I actually had to send some money to the Ronald McDonald House. And you can do it anonymously. So if you're looking for a way to make amends, Ronald McDonald House, they'll take it anonymously, so you don't get any credit for it. Because I don't want the credit for it. As an example, I wanted to make amends for, I owed some money to Cook County Hospital from some work they did on me many years ago. And I went back, one time we went back to Chicago, I went looking for Cook County Hospital, and it's not there anymore. The old hospital's gone. There's a new hospital a few blocks away. So I went over there and I said, hey, listen, you guys did some surgery on me back in, I don't know, 1981 or whatever it was. And I went under a John Doe kind of thing, and I said, I want to square that bill up. I want to make it right. And the lady looked at her. She said, what's your name? And she looked at her. She says, we don't have anything. You're going to have to go to Records, which is another four blocks that way. So I went down to Records, and this nice grandmotherly old lady was sitting there, and I gave her the spiel like I was making the amend to her. And I said, ma'am, I have to do this. I have to make this right. And she's looking it up. She says, young man, she says, I'm sorry, we don't have anything for you. Those records are long gone. We don't keep them that old, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, can I just leave the money with you? She says, oh, no, we don't take cash. I was like, well, what am I going to do? She says, and she asked me, she says, are you a Christian man? And like a dummy, this is where I'm a dummy. No, I'm a spiritual guy. Anyways, so I went back. I couldn't leave the money with her, so I took it back with me. And when we got, I talked to my sponsor about it. He says, well, I'm sure you can find somewhere to give that money to. And I thought, well, they could use it at our church. Because of what you guys have taught me, I went from being a very anti-religion guy to being kind of open-minded about religion. And I go to church once in a while. And I became a nominal church member where my wife and I go. And so I was talking to my wife about it. I said, I need to put this money in a basket, but I can't have anybody know where it came from. She's like, oh, no, I don't know if we can do that, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, all right, then I'll find somewhere else to take it. She says, you know what? Give it to me. I'll make sure nobody knows where it came from. And she got it in there somehow. I don't know what she did. But in doing all of these things, so right here it says we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. It's God's people. We stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And well, I'll wait until Dave reads the next part, and then I'll go on from there. Thank you.
Thanks. I wrote a letter to my half-sister. My father had his second wife. He had seven kids, and then he had the four of us. So we had this huge mixed-up family, and they lived down in Knott's Island, as I said. So she wanted to get away from Knott's Island, which is a real country kind of place. She wanted to come up to the big city, Norfolk. Whoa. So I told her she could stay with me and my mother, without asking my mother, of course. And so she came up for a summer, and her and I, we were both just graduated from high school. We were young, we were drinking, we were having a good time. And again, sailors come into the picture. So we met some guys, and they all shared a house off base and stuff. And it was a party house, you know, you drink and carry on and have girls and stuff. We had a good time, they were nice guys. And she fell in love with her guy, and I didn't fall in love with my guy. But Steve says he likes shiny things. I like other people's things, other people's people. And so she was in love with this guy, and I just, what the hell, I started flirting with him. And I ended up hurting her in that way. And years later, she moved to Iowa, and after I got sober, and I was feeling horrible about this, so I wrote her a letter. And in the letter, again, it was kind of a self-serving amends. I did tell her I was sorry for what I had done, but I think I threw in there why I had to do it or something, and making it not really my fault. But I never heard from her, and I'm like, well, she probably hates me for years. This has been years and years. And then in February of this year, my daughter came for a visit, and we decided to go down there. She's in touch with all of these people, much more than I am. So we go down there and we visit with my half-sister and half-brother, and it was the most wonderful visit. I mean, we had so much fun. I took some pictures, old pictures of her father, and family members, and we visited, and we went and had lunch, and it was just beautiful. And during lunch, I was trying to get a feel, can I make an amends? Is this what God wants me to do? Is this what I should do? Because I knew that letter wasn't very good. And so I didn't want to just blurt it out. So we got quiet. We got the two of us in the corner. And I asked her, I said, you remember that summer we lived together? And she said, yeah. She said, I had the most fun. She said, you were so great. And she just went on and on talking about, like Steve said, about how wonderful and how grateful she was that we let her stay with us, and how freeing it was and how much fun. And I said, you know, it was great for me too. Sometimes our memories of what needs to be done, we need to let God guide us in that. Because it turned out, whatever her recollection was, it wasn't the same as mine. And I think it would have hurt her if I brought that up. There was no reason to. But I'm really grateful for that visit we had. It made me feel very, very, very good. Number one, that I didn't hurt her as bad as, or that she didn't remember, I don't know. And number two, that she is just such a loving spirit. She just welcomed us with an open heart. That was great. Thanks.
We are about out of time. Let's see if we can get you a minute. Page 83, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. 1 minute each.
I think it's very disingenuous when we read this at meetings and we don't explain to people when this takes place. So the unpromises are to be devilments. We're having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. Couldn't seem to be a real help with other people. So how do I go from that in the middle of step two to this? There's not that many pages to go from that to getting the promises. And if I want the true spiritual awakening that it talks about in step 12, that's the work that I have to do. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
The promises are great. When I first came in, I was just salivating to get some of that. They were so awesome. I wanted some of that in my life so badly. And like Steve said, you got to work to get to them. But I will say today for me, some days those promises are popping like a mad dog. They're really happening. I'm feeling them. It's just like, wow. And then some days they're just promises. And I don't get that at all. Some days. My sobriety is in today. I try to be as sober as I can today. I don't care how many years you got or what. It's dependent on the day I'm in. Depends on what I'm doing, whether that is happening or not. So thanks.
Well, thank you both so much. We are going to pass the 7 tradition basket. Seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, and local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA?
Hi, my name's Kay. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kay.
My home group, which is Monday night speakers meeting, I'm missing it. I know they're missing me. at Miles Memorial Church is having an after Easter meeting next Monday. We're going to have two speakers, and the topic will be step three in the big book, where we are reborn. We're also going to have food and fellowship at 6 o'clock. We're going to have ham biscuits and deviled eggs and a carrot cake. So please come and enjoy fellowship. And great speakers. We got two good ones.
Thanks, Ted.
I'm not telling
you. Go, Steve.
At the Interaction Speaker Meeting, which meets at Glebe Episcopal Church in Suffolk on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m., our speakers all this month have all been provided by the Suffolk Women's Group, and our speaker tomorrow night will be Amanda A. Also, on the last Tuesday of next month, which will be May 28th, we're going to be celebrating our third anniversary. It's going to be an eating meeting. The eating starts at 7 o'clock, and the speaker will be afterwards. And our speaker will be David Hall from Virginia Beach.
Thank you. I know that guy.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Okay, I am not announcing this this green flyer for our event. That, coincidentally, the night before the one that Steve just did on Monday, May 27th, in this room, potluck, and Steve M., Jim W.'s sponsor from Raleigh, North Carolina, is going to come down and share with us. The reason I'm telling you about it is because there's green flyers over there, and we would love it if you would grab some on your way out, take them back to your group so we can get the word out to the community. Make sense? Sure. Thanks. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members? Newcomers, you're the reason we're here tonight. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you by first name if you care to give it up.
Ethan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ethan. Welcome.
My name's Melanie, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Melanie. Welcome. Welcome. Anybody else? I'm feeling like three more. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come and talk to me. There is literature available on the table over there. Please see myself or any home group member if you'd like to purchase a book. They're available at our cost. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Could we please thank our dear Steve and Kay again? I'd like to thank everyone who participated, and after we clean up tonight, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial, just down the road, not far at all. If you get to the railroad tracks, you've gone too far. And could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
I'm Nicole, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nicole.
Nicole. All right, let's circle up.
Let's go in front of the table.
We can do it.